Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 268. My name's Turner Sparks.
I am Michael Kaplan. How you doing?
You can find me at turnersparks.com, at turnersparks on Instagram. New York City for the next few months, writing my next hour of comedy. Then I'll be back. I'm going in and out a little bit over the summer. July 30th, I'll be in Philly. Everybody come out to that show. You can find Kaplan at Cap'n America on all social media platforms. If you would have been in LA last week, you could have found him at Disneyland, but he's not there anymore.
Found me at Disneyland or walking the streets. I had to say hi to all of our fans in LA.
You walk the streets of Los Angeles.
I walk everywhere. People were like, you could take a car. And I'm like, what? Take a car. I walk.
Yeah.
So I walk the streets. I saw homeless guys literally hug people in Los Angeles. They're much friendlier there. They hug women who are attractive, but they just go up to you and hug you.
We have the opposite attitude towards the homeless here. And I mean, the homeless have an opposite attitude in New York. I was last night, first night back in New York City, and I was on the West Village doing shows, walking down the street, and this homeless guy was just walking through a crowd of people, you know, outside the Comedy Cellar and that area where there's just hundreds of people on the streets. Yes. And he's going up to every hot woman and every hot white girl. And he goes, what you looking at, you Amber Heard looking bitch?
So the homeless guy's following the Johnny Depp trial.
Yeah, he is.
That's my favorite thing ever.
And he's calling everyone, you're an Amber Heard looking bitch. You're an Amber Heard looking bitch. You're an Amber. Any mildly attractive white woman he's just screaming at.
So that's a compliment to Amber Heard that she's just like, she's the new standard for hot white women.
Even the homeless, yeah, somehow get cable television.
In LA, they just hug you. And then the women don't want to seem rude because they're all very liberal, obviously. So they don't want to say gross. They make a face, but they make it to themselves. You know, they hold it in and then when they release and they walk away. And that's Santa Monica right now. So that's different.
Well, that sounds better. I mean, if you're a hot white girl, go to L.A. Don't come to New York.
Exactly.
You seem to be treated better by the homeless.
Amber Heard looking bitch. Go to L.A.
On the podcast today, we got Misha Kalin back, everybody. Still in Kyiv in Ukraine at the 18th. The last time we checked, he was on the 18th floor of his apartment looking down on his city. Zelensky's city, but really Misha's city.
Misha's city.
And he's still there, folks. As they say on Twitter, good morning. Kyiv is still in the hand. I mean, Ukraine is still in the hands of the Ukrainian people. Ukraine is still in the hands of Misha Kalin. He still runs the city, runs the country. So he will be with us in just a second.
His side of town.
Patreon.com/Lost in America. That's where you go to join our Patreon crew, our group, our army, our pod army. Patreon.com/Lost America. $5 a month gets you extra episodes of Cap and I. Listen, I'll go into detail about the Amber Heard looking.
we'll go more deep into the homeless population.
I'm going to be writing my next hour of comedy over the next few months in New York City. But if you can't come to New York City for $5 a month, you can hear the genesis of it all. It all comes from our Patreon show.
The process.
So that's the process.
I don't perform anywhere. So if you want to hear me,
Kaplan's doing his hour every night.
That's why I do my hour. Yeah.
So go there for $10 a month. You get a number one in Armenia t-shirt. We went to number one in Armenia. Of course, everybody already knows that.
Cool news.
And for $20 a month, you get your own ad on this show once a month. We just had the great Dennis Owens leave us an ad a week or two ago, and that could be you. $20 a month. That's it. Don't tell our sponsors. They pay a lot more, but for you, it's only $20. Now, Let's get right to it. Misha's in Kyiv. Everybody knows what's happening over there. Kaplan, you've said it's not in the news anymore. You said
we had
saw
a, big disagreement off air about this. Yeah.
You saw an Ashton Kutcher tweet saying that no one talks about Ukraine anymore. We got to start talking about it again. And you said to me, that's so true. No one talks about it. I says, I don't know who you hang out with, but it's still in the news I read. It's still in the mouths of the people I see. But your glib group in your Manhattanites, you've moved on.
All of my people, they're just all very angry about Elon Musk buying Twitter, and nobody seems to remember there's a war going on.
That is true. A lot of the liberals have
more
moved
angry
on.
About that. So
that is
moved,
true. You're right on that point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, most
there
of
was
liberal
the
America.
Smith thing. There was a lot of things that have happened that have knocked, in my opinion. I know, understand it's in the news, but it's not on the front page news. I feel like.
Well, here's where we're at. Secretary Blinken was there. Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, as I call him,
he goes by.
He was, what'd you say?
He's a Jew. I have to take credit. Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah.
Look at that. How about that?
That's why he sent him over to talk to Zelensky.
Oh, that's that's a good point. So anyway, he was there a couple days ago. It looks like the United States is ramping up our commitment to Ukraine. And let's get Misha in right now. Misha's there on the ground. How's it going for you, Misha?
Hey guys, thanks for having me again. I'm still in Kyiv. The war is definitely still news for me. the things in the city are slowly getting back to normal. We still have block posts on the road. We still have curfew. We still have air sirens and everything. So that's still happening, but the stores are working more or less as usual. Then cafes and basically life is slowly getting back to normal. The weather is getting better. So yeah, you can tell more and more people are coming back to Kyiv. That's a big thing. Yeah. Before, like about 2 weeks ago, it was still empty. Now you still... you know, you have traffic jams, people walking around in the streets, riding bicycles and everything. So, yeah, the city seems to be going on as usual.
People who had left the country come back or people?
Yeah, a lot of people are coming back. Yep.
That's good to hear.
When did so I know a few weeks ago, I'm trying to think exactly when it was, but Putin said, the whole goal early on, the first month or so, was for Russia to take Kyiv and kind of like take over the country. I assume kill Zelensky, kill all the top leaders, assume power, and then all of a sudden you're all now living in Russia. That was the initial goal. And then somewhere along the way, that didn't come to fruition. And then Putin said, oh, no, our goal the whole time was just to take the Donbass region. And now we're focused on that.
And called off the dogs in Kyiv, apparently, right?
Yeah, and the Russian military, which could never fully penetrate Kyiv, they were just kind of on the outskirts. They had taken some of the smaller towns, which now we've seen have been like huge, atrocities there. A ton of people were killed. But how long ago was it when they pulled off? And then how long did it take after that for people like you and people around the city to actually trust that they were not going to be coming in and for the city to kind of get back going again?
Those are great questions. You're totally right. So basically the picture is like this. Their first attempt was to take the city very suddenly, right? That was the blitzkrieg, right? So they actually had people or like groups they called them the diversion groups, right? So basically just one or two vehicles or a group of soldiers parachuting in certain spots. So those groups got into the city and were quickly eliminated. And then the rest of them, most of them were, they were based in the outskirts. That's where all the atrocities happened and everything, right? Basically they had to get out of there because they were spread too thin. They were attacking in Kyiv and in Donbass and in other directions. And when they saw that they were, the casualties were very heavy, and they weren't accomplishing any of their goals. So they had to change the strategy. But and see, it's funny because you say, like Putin said, as if he's the guy who's making decisions. This is the ironic part. We don't know who is making decisions on the Russian side, because on the Ukrainian side, they have Zaluzhny, which is the guy who, you know, along with the president, is making all the military strategic decisions. And basically, you have guys in Ukraine that you can point the finger and say, like, these are the decision makers, right?
These are like generals, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. But it's very, very foggy, right? And very, so you can't tell what's going on the Russian side. Because as you saw, Shoigu, which is the, whatever the, I don't know what, yeah, let's say he's the Russian general, the top guy, but his background is not military at all. I think he was in the military, and I think he like herded a deer or something, or like reindeer or something. I'm not kidding.
He was like a shepherd?
Yeah. Because he's from, he's from like way in Siberia, like all those places. And so he has like a very weird role in the military. So he definitely is not capable of making any kind of strategic decisions.
Well, haven't a lot of their generals died?
Yeah. And that's another thing that we've kind of touched on when we talked last time. But since then, and exactly, like, generals are dying and their officers are dying. So basically the.
So it's all the way down to a deer herder.
Well, no,
it's not, the line of succession, like, in Russian military. Yeah. This is why that's so great. It's like top general, KGB guy, deer herder.
This is like, what if it gets all the way down to us? If like America goes to war and they're like, well, Kaplan and Turner, you got to, like, tell us what to do.
It's like, my
listen, this is just scraping the surface. If you look into that, Shoigu's biography, like, he comes from Tyva, which is like deep in Siberia, where they have like shamans and voodoo and all that bullshit. And that's why they say, like, Putin take baths in reindeer blood or moose, whatever blood, right? It all comes from there because he has.
This is his shaman, basically.
This is his shaman. He's like Silicon Valley.
This is how I remember. And Kabla, can you turn up just like a slight bit? This is how South Korea, now these years of doing this podcast is starting to pay off, because I remember this is how South Korea fell. A couple years ago, the president of South Korea got impeached. It was as a female president, because they found out she was taking all of her direction and all of her orders on how to run the country. She was taking it from her her fortune teller.
Yeah.
And then she was like, yeah, of course I am. Who else would I listen to? And they're like, oh, you're out of here. And so Putin's taking his direction from a shaman in the mountains of Siberia.
Exactly.
That's surprising. I thought Putin was at least not a shaman guy.
Shoigu's. I didn't peg him for a shaman guy. I thought he would listen to nobody but himself.
Yeah, but he's like an LA executive or a Silicon Valley executive now, who makes big decisions about the company.
How can that be the case? I mean, think about it. The LA executive, where the fuck do those people come from? Like Ivy League or whatever, maybe they're self-made. We're talking about Putin, you know, the 5'5", KGB educated, deep sort of Soviet. We're talking like 70s, right?
He's 5'5"?
Yeah, he's very short.
I love
short.
It. I'm taller than him. I didn't know that.
Wait, he's 5'5"? This makes
the whole thing
sense.
He's got short men's probably. He's overcompensating.
Yeah.
The pictures of them shirtless. It all makes sense now.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, remember those pictures of him shirtless? He doesn't even look good. But somehow people were like, oh, man, he's so sexy. And I thought, how the fuck is he sexy? Like, I look way better. And it's not even a thing. You know, like, you look way better. It's,
and you're like, what? You're almost 6 feet, right around that. You're taller than 5'5".
Yeah, 5'10". You know.
Let's release some merch. Our next line of merch is Misha riding a horse shirtless, just on a t-shirt. Let's do it.
And it's called. And it says, "Come and get it."
Come and get it, Putin.
I guess we just changed. You know, I guess in 10 years, the body goal just kind of changed. 10 years ago, Putin was a goal, right? And now,
it was like 15 years ago, you could like smoke cigarettes at halftime and play in the NBA. It was fine.
Yeah.
And now you got to. So when they left, so Putin pulled back. Did people then immediately be like, because we talked to Anton Timoshenko a few weeks ago, and we talked to him right when Putin left, and he didn't trust it at all. He's like, he'll be back here in a week. But it's now been a few weeks. And
when we say come back, what do we mean? The troops will never penetrate, you know, because they don't have enough troops. Are they going to still keep hitting us with the rockets and all that stuff? Of course. And that threat is never going away. So we have to be, in a sense, vigilant. You know, that's all I can say. So
how did you guys win the battle in Kyiv?
Well, first of all, because the way they acted was really, really stupid, you know, because the initial plan was to start off with artillery, hit the cities, and then get the desant, what do you call it, the parachute guys.
Paratroopers
or whatever, and then put the paratroopers and everything, right? But Putin was so in a hurry, he thought that we don't need to, you know, let's speed it all up, you know, let's just put the paratroopers. He thought that he spent so much money on propaganda within Ukraine. He thought he had a lot of people on his side, and that he's gonna go in, and people are either gonna be like, oh, it's Putin, we're so scared of him, and they're just gonna give up, or they're going to be actually happy and go like, oh, we've been waiting for you. But neither of those things happened, right? And so they just eliminated those. And those were the elite forces. And that's why, like, some of them were the best. In Gostomel, they lasted for 8 hours, which was, you know, pretty good. The rest of the Russian troops don't last that long.
They were the elite Russian forces, the ones who just got slaughtered in Kyiv?
Well, yeah, in certain parts. I don't know. I guess it's paratroop. Dude, I should have definitely researched all those terms in English.
Okay. I understand what you're talking about.
The non-elite guys would be dead in 4 hours. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
The non-elite, they don't even land. They don't even touch the ground.
They don't know how to open. The non-elite guys don't know how to open the parachute up, so they just crash. They're like kamikaze guys. Actually, that'd be more effective, probably. Kill pedestrians.
But you're laughing, but that's what happened. You know, some of the parachute, I think it was the first day or the second day of the war, and they had like 6 or 7 of them. In my mind, I see like it's outside of my building, but
falling out of the sky.
That looked identical, you know, and I don't think they even hit the ground.
Ground alive.
Yeah, maybe they crashed into the ground.
Yeah.
They were just shot.
Oh, they were shot.
Everybody
out. Snipers.
Another thing, you know, how did we win? Within the first 2 days, everybody who wanted a gun in the city had a gun, you know?
Yeah. So anybody can, like, put their head out their window and shoot down a parachuter.
You see a guy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the first, they actually had them somehow, like, armored vehicle, and there was a joke going around that some gypsy stole it or something like that. Like, that's what was going on. Like, people were just taking military vehicles away from Russian soldiers.
Oh, the gypsies stole it from the Russians. Yeah,
no,
those gypsies will steal anything.
They're useful.
You know, we speak the same language. They would stop in the middle. Sometimes they would run out of gas and start asking for directions. I swear to God,
the Russians would run out of gas?
You know, what's happening? Yeah, the first days.
And ask for directions.
They didn't fill up the tank before they invaded. It's kind of, you got to check the tank and be like,
they're not jokes. These are all facts. Like, that's exactly, you know, some of them didn't want to go in because they were afraid, and they were just making circles just to run out of gas. I mean, I'm serious. Like, in the first days of war, all of these things were happening. And that's why, like, that's a big part of why Ukraine is doing so well, is because Russian military has been a victim of corruption, systemic corruption over the years. So it was basically decapitated, you know, well, thank God, you know, I mean, that saved thousands and, you know, thousands of lives.
I remember you telling us a few podcasts ago that they thought when a lot of the Russian military, first of all, they're young. Well, a lot of militaries are young, but they're young. And then they genuinely thought people would be happy to see them, and they were coming to liberate everyone. So they almost, a lot of them weren't even prepared to fight because they thought, oh, yeah, we're just going, everyone's going to be so happy when we get there. And then when people are shooting them and pissed off, they're like, whoa, what's going on? And then they're dead.
Yeah. Yeah. They brought parade clothing with them and anyway, parade uniforms with them.
Oh, really? Like they thought they would be having people going to a party. A parade.
Yeah. And that's another thing. They had riot police with them. Like one of the battalion or whatever, you know, a group of soldiers. What do you call that shit?
Yeah, battalion.
They're there to keep the crowds down, but they're not like fighters.
Yeah.
They're like,
yeah. So they had all the, you know, shields and batons and everything. And those guys were just demolished like this, you know, because they weren't ready for it, you know, and they were just met with the tanks and javelins.
Yeah, it almost feels like Russia was banking on Zelensky just fleeing, you know, like leaving the country day one, like the guy did in Kabul in Afghanistan. The president of Afghanistan just left within like an hour, and then the whole thing fell and out within 2 hours. And they kind of, it's like they just thought Zelensky would do the same thing. And the minute he didn't, it's like, uh-oh, what do we do now?
Yeah, it's just getting away with it. Putin, that's always been his thing. He was the lucky one. You know, he goes in and then just somehow it just happens. So he had his this kind of air about him that he had, you know, he maybe knew something that nobody else did. Listen, this is a classic tale, man. We've seen it in stand-up, you know.
What's the Putin analogy to stand-up?
you know, like a Dane Cook, you know what I mean? Like you watch him for years, you're like, oh, you know, like what's so special about this guy?
And there's then no there later, there. You're saying there's no there as we would say. There's no thing. There's no, when you get to the center, there's nothing on the inside.
Exactly. And then in retrospect, you're like, oh, okay, see, I knew that. I don't know why everybody else was laughing. And I was the one who was always right. And now everybody understands this, right? And the same thing, right? I have idolized him.
Dane Cook seems like a good guy overall. Just not a cheesy comedian, but I wouldn't say he's Putin.
Right, well, right.
There's levels.
This comparison, it's a flawed comparison, but I like it. It's just to say, just like.
But he did have his shirt off the same amount of times they had their shirt off.
He likes to take his shirt off. He likes to overcompensate. He's taller than 5'5", though. So.
Dude, now that I'm thinking, there are a lot more similarities than.
Does Putin steal jokes? No.
I'm sure Putin steals jokes. Oh, yeah, what about.
I have a joke. I have a joke for you. It's a political joke that's going on right now. This joke is huge in Russia right now. Okay.
Yeah.
So they go. A random dude is walking down the street in Moscow and he wants to buy dollars. So he goes to the bank and he goes, "Hey, you guys have any dollars?" And they go, "No, we don't." You go, "Oh man, the US is fucked."
I like it.
That's a good one. Yeah,
that's good. What about then it's things are getting back to normal, like are schools open or what, or you know, what do how normal?
Yeah,
schools, I'm not sure actually, but I know for a fact
Kaplan wouldn't like it. Kaplan wants the schools open.
School's open or it's not normal,
so you can send his kids to school, get him out of the house.
Dude, I'm my sure son better. Called me. My son called me and he was like, "Hey, I want to come back to Kiev because it's boring in Poland and everything." But I think he just heard that everybody graduates by default in Kiev.
It's like years over. It's already, you made it to March.
Do you ever have those teachers who just gave up? They're like, "Fine, everyone gets a B. I'm taking the last month of school off. Everybody gets a B.
He's not doing remote learning in Poland. They don't have to set up a whole thing with.
Well, basically, yeah, it's all going to be some kind of hybrid version of learning right now where everybody graduates.
Yeah. So is the plan for your family? Sorry. We'll stick to that one. So what, so like shops are open, are businesses back open? I know Anton told us people have been working remotely kind of through the whole thing.
Rent is way down. And in fact, I'm living in a place now. Nobody's asking me for rent. So people are kind of lenient in terms of filing taxes and everything. Basically, the rule is if you can't do it, if you can't, just don't worry about it.
You have a tax day like April 15th or something?
But my account is frozen and everything. I can't even do anything. But plus, I've already donated way more than I would ever pay in taxes or anyway.
Account is still frozen because you're Belarusians. Your accounts are still frozen.
If Gary Sparks, my dad, or the CPA to the pod, was on the call right now, he would strongly advise Misha to say no comment.
To his accounts being frozen?
Regarding his taxes. If he's going to pay him or not.
I'm going to pay him. No, actually, my Ukrainian account is frozen.
Right.
So that's the crazy thing. And
that's
I'm working
because you're from Belarus?
You were also banned from Wimbledon. I'm sorry to tell you this. I know if you're thinking of playing the tennis tournament, they banned all Russians and Belarusians.
Belarusians.
Yes, they banned them both. So you're banned. So, yeah. I mean, I know you're going to play.
Our reputation is slowly recovering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're helping with that.
So it seemed like the first big win, at least that we found out about from the Ukrainian side, because Ukraine's been playing defense this entire time, right? And then a couple weeks ago, that ship sunk somewhere out in the ocean, a Russian ship sunk. And Putin was like classic bully move where he's like, oh, you sunk my ship. And when I say Putin, I just mean Russia in general. But it's like a classic bully move like, oh, you attacked us? Well, now we're really coming after you. And you sunk our ship? Like, get ready now because you don't want it. But it's like you've already been attacking us for a month and a half. Like, what are we supposed to do? How was that? Did you hear about that in the news, about the sunken ship? How did they present that to people? How did the Ukrainian media present that to all of you?
All right. Well, this is the way I saw this story is that, the ship was sunk and the version, first of all, Ukraine doesn't claim any of these actions, right? So they don't comment, right? They say, oh, okay, maybe it happened. Maybe we did it. Maybe Russia did it, which is a smart move because they don't want retaliation, right? But essentially, you know, the global version, the international version is that, Ukrainian, it was like a special operation where they distracted the radars and then hit it with two missiles called Neptune or something and probably distracted it with a drone or something like that. Now, does Russia admit that that's what happened? No. What did they say? Somebody smoked in the wrong place or something like that. So they deny it was something that was done from the outside. They think it was an internal error. And after that happened, the only thing that Putin said, he actually said, do not bomb the part of Mariupol. Have you heard about that? The Azovstal, which is a huge, huge industrial place.
In Russia or in Ukraine?
In Ukraine.
Oh, Mariupol. Yeah. That's one of the cities that attacks are going on.
Right. And so what's happening there, I mean, they call it a plant, right? Or like a factory, but think of it as like, you know, like Suzhou Industrial Park, you know, how they had like huge industrial areas, something like that. It's huge. It's like, basically, somebody said how big it was. I don't remember.
Like
exactly,
a gigantic business park.
Yeah. So basically, if they wanted to surround it or make it airtight, which is what Putin ordered, if they were to do that, they would have to use pretty much all of their troops. So it's impossible.
So size-wise, just because you and I know what we're talking about, but it's Suzhou Industrial Park. But size-wise, it's like I think the size of like Disney World, including all of the areas, or maybe like
not Disneyland.
Disney World. No, way bigger, way bigger. Yeah. Or the city of San Francisco, roughly, like not Oakland and all that, but like the city itself. It's a pretty big area.
Right. Well, at any rate, it's huge, right? And so Putin said, do not bomb it or something, because he basically knows it doesn't make any sense, because most people are underground and they have a special underground system. So there's no way they're getting them. Like I've heard some military experts, he said, you know, essentially, just by bombing them, you cannot get them. You can easily use chemical weapons to get them out. That would be easy, but you know.
So these are their – Mariupol is a city in the south of Ukraine, and it has been in our news as this last group of – Russia's been trying to take it over for like the entire war, and there's this last group of special forces or military, Ukrainian military, who are still holding out there and say they'll fight to the death. And they're in a factory, but they're hiding out underground in this factory with a bunch of children and families and bystanders. And Russia's just been focused for a month to try to get this last group of people. So you're saying now Russia's pulled off of that and they say they're just going to let those forget about them and move on?
No, they said they were going to. In fact, after that, the ship thing, when that happened, right, Putin said, do not do it. You know, focus on Donbass, right? But right after he said that, they started bombing it even heavier. This is why I hate Russia, honestly, because they do it every fucking time, you know? They say, and they blatantly, this is the kind of person, you know these people in your life that just stare in your fucking face and lie to your face, and you're like, I know that you're lying, and they don't care. And that's Russia in a nutshell, dude. They do it over and over again. It's like you cannot
Carlos Mencia.
Not Dan Cook. That man tells you the truth to your face.
Honestly, now that I'm thinking, you know, he's even worse. I can't even think of a bad comedian like that, you know?
Who will steal jokes and then tell you to your face he's not stealing your joke? There's a couple in Shanghai, but there was one in Shanghai I can think of, but we'll move on. Starts with a B. So they're saying they're not going to bomb, and then they bomb. Did Ukrainian people, when this ship sunk, the Russian ship, was that seen as a win amongst the Ukraine, like just the average person? Or did the Ukrainian people also say like, well, we didn't have anything to do with that?
Oh, no. Ukrainian people, they essentially, they're determined to win, and they're counting Russian losses like I'm counting YouTube views on my videos, you know?
That's what I mean. So they must have been pretty happy about it.
Yeah, but it doesn't, essentially just the more the merrier, you know? A ship, great, you know? I mean, we get really super happy when we hit a plane. Every plane is like a party, because those planes drop. Basically, the better our air defense is, the happier we are. That's why, like, last time we talked, we weren't expecting all the like serious weapons coming in, but now we're getting more like heavier defense weapons and everything, not just like javelins and drones and stuff. Yeah, like now we're getting anti-aircraft and like artillery and stuff. And so I think things are turning around already. Like Donbass, Russia is not reaching any of their tactical goals, and they're just losing people and losing the machinery.
Wait, so we know that Russia's given up on, for the time being, on Kyiv, but you're saying they're focusing everything on Donbass, which is in the southeast of the country, along the border with Russia. It's the region that Russia has said they've owned for a long time, because there's a lot of ethnically Russian people, or whatever it might be, Russian speaking people who live there. But you're saying they're even losing that now.
Yeah, I mean, they're barely moving in that direction. Heavy casualties. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's from what I understand, there's heavy fire, and there's some successes, but of course, Ukrainian forces are doing their job, and yeah.
I want to get into more of that. I want to find out what's next and also how your family's doing. But before that, Kaplan, we got to take a break and talk about the World's Smartest Podcast Network, which we are part of. It's us, Lost in America. It is the Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton, Professor Andrew Heaton. It is Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy and the Majoring in Everything podcast. It's all of us. Go to worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com to find out about all their shows. Subscribe to all their shows on whatever podcast platform you use. And now, Kaplan, a word from our local sponsor. All right, we're back.
Thank you, sponsors.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Misha, how has life been for you over the last few weeks? We have had a lot of people asking when you're going to come back on. Everybody's wanting an update. Every time there's some surge, there hasn't been in a few weeks, but every some surge or bombing in Kiev, everyone then checks in with us and asks if you're okay, and we tell them you are. But how's it been just day-to-day for you?
I mean, honestly, I'm enjoying life, you know.
Enjoying life. The classic Misha answer.
Yeah, but this is your senses are heightened, dude. Like, everything that happens has more significance.
Misha was built for war.
Yeah, he's like those people who enjoyed the early lockdown.
You're like, this, like, he's like the end of Deer Hunter. He's still in NAMM. He's got a Russian roulette.
But I take it seriously. And honestly, like, if before I was just telling my son, you know, you got to learn English and everything. Now, in all seriousness, I'm going to be able to, like, this is my plan, or a short-term plan. Me, my son, and everybody I know are all going to be proficient in guns and all of that shit, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not joking. This is
Do you have a gun? Did you get one since we last spoke?
I mean, when things get back to normal, and I can just, this is going to be a weekend thing. Like, I already do boxing like 3 times a week. I told you all that stuff, right? Now it's just a matter of going, you know, 3 times a week boxing, then add, you know, twice a week target practice, and do that for 5 years for the rest of my life, dude. That's it. This is
my idea now. Wait, I have an idea. My Uncle Keith.
Oh boy.
Lives in Carlsbad, New Mexico. He is a champion rifle shooter. Well, no, not rifle. What are the, I guess, shotgun, probably.
Skeet shooter?
What's that?
Skeet shooter?
No. Skeet. Yeah, he shoots skeet. Yeah, they shoot him in the, they throw it, they, like, you know, they shoot the little clay pigeon thing in the air. He shoots it out of the sky.
Duck hunt.
He regularly gets 99, 98 out of 100 in these competitions. We should fly him over there. And he should teach you and all your friends how to shoot.
He could take up a whole militia infantry. He could
be
a leader.
Great.
Cookie's crew.
I mean, everybody I know is doing it already. So it's just a matter of, I did it in Arkansas all the time. That's what
I was
going
to say. You used to
Can
live
he do
Arkansas.
It on Zoom? Can he just do it, teach a class online right now?
It might be
get
tough.
Uncle Keith.
We'll get him over there.
I can't aim a gun either. So let me join the class.
Yeah, Cap can fly over.
I can't even see it. But yeah.
So I think it's smart. Honestly, if your country's getting attacked, you need to learn how to fight back, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're just going to have to learn from Israel. It's happening in Israel. Why not here? So that's one. And then two, I mean, I'm glad you know me for a while, right? I mean, when I was the only Belarusian most people knew in Suzhou, right?
Yeah.
You know, all these kind of conversations, like, where are you from? Belarus? Oh, Russia, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Not anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, 10 years ago, maybe those conversations were still happening. 10 years from now, probably won't happen again, you know?
Yeah.
And it's going to be very different, right? And so, essentially, we're going back to the... there was such a thing as Kiev and Rus, right? So there was a country called Rus, right? Where the Rus from Russia comes from. That's not theirs. They stole it just like everything else, you know? That came from Kiev. And it's a country that's twice as old as Moscovia, you know? And now we finally kind of have this historical poetic justice in a way, you know? We're going back to the roots. And now Moscovia remains Moscovia, you know? They have no... rights for the this initial kingdom of Kiev and Rus, you know, that is based on the idea of freedom. And that's what we're building now, a new version of it, where everything is built on the idea of personal freedom. The whatever, the horde, the Moscovia and all that, that's, you know.
It seems like it's really backfired on Putin then, because like he wanted to create a greater Russia, but he's got people who maybe didn't care as much. Yeah, if you're Ukrainian before, if someone thought you were Russian, you were okay with it. And now you're never going to be okay with it again. Like you just said, like that, there's much more national pride.
Well, exactly. But even to us, when we said Ruski, you know, it never sounded like Russian. It just kind of goes back to that Rus. You know, it's like calling somebody Slavic, you know? So when you call somebody Slavic, okay, you have some kind of common background and everything. So essentially, Kiev is going to be the capital of the Slavic world again. And Russia no longer has the right to claim that world, you know?
Well, especially now that Putin's played his cards and everyone can now see his military's a joke. I mean, frankly, like if he can't take Ukraine, what's he going to do? Why are we scared of him? Why would the U.S. be scared of him? You know, I mean, I get that he has a nuke, but can it even, will it even go 10 feet, or will it just explode in his own backyard? And then
still don't want to fly out for the record. But
yeah. I don't know. Why are we all running around scared of Putin?
Yeah. And you know what I what else I learned from one of the political whatever the. Basically, one of the endless podcasts that I listen to on the subject. But one of the cool things that the guy said, you know, all the satellites are watching all the spots where they think or where they know the nuclear weapons are. So yes, once they have any movement there, they're just going to strike that spot right there. And it's just going to be some, you know, like a small explosion. And it's going to do some damage to Russia, but it's definitely not going to be as big of an impact globally. Sure. So, you know, that's another.
I mean, I saw a satellite shot the other day. So Google Maps now has, and everyone can do this at home, they've increased their the depth
granularity.
Yeah, that you can see into places, and with the increased level, you can now go deep into. You can look like right onto the Russian airfields, and half of them are made out. Half the planes are made out of styrofoam. And they're just there because in the previous like satellite images, you couldn't tell. But now that you can see their styrofoam, and some of them are blown up. They're like literally like a bounce house, like the same material. It's like a blow up airplane. Kaplan, I know you got to leave in a couple minutes. Do you have a couple questions? I've been hogging this thing before you go. I didn't mean to cut you out.
No, I have a few minutes. I can stay for like 10 minutes. So okay. I'll run out of here. Yeah. So no, that's all right. No, that's it. That's it. Wait, you were saying, so you're saying they have fake, they don't even have. Like their air force is smaller than we think.
Half the planes, like the styrofoam is broken apart, and so you can see like a styrofoam wing like laying on the ground next to a plane that just doesn't have a wing, which is clearly also made of styrofoam.
They could be intentional, you know, because they that's what, as far as I know, Ukraine did that too, because on the first few minutes of the war, lots of places were hit in Ukraine, and a lot of them were just kind of like fake places, you know, so they were they didn't really do any damage. So there's a lot of things that go in there, right? And it's like a huge intelligence war, right? Because that's what you want, to think that this is your air field, right? So they it gets hit, but most of those airplanes are fake. So that could be it, just to give them some benefit of the doubt, right? But having said that, by the, you know, videos that we see here, you know, most of their machinery is in bad shape. It's old. It's two generations behind of what Ukraine is getting now, or what NATO's using.
So now that the U.S. has come and Blinken was there, and it seems like the U.S. is now heavily committed to this war, and the U.S. government has now said that, I believe it was in the papers today, I don't know if it was Biden or Blinken, but one of them said that Ukraine will last longer than Putin, which is clear quote saying that Putin might be out of power sometime soon, you know?
And we're getting more bold. People are supporting them with weapons more than, but I feel like other countries are coming forward with more and more weapons
so
for Ukraine.
So what is the goal now? I mean, the previous goal was just to defend the country and keep Russia out. Is now it regime change? Is it now like, hey, we not only want to, we want to defend our country, but we want to get rid of Putin?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because there's no other way. If we freeze, the worst thing that can happen right now is some half-assed peace treaty. Yeah. That would be the worst for Belarus, for Ukraine, and for the evolved Russia, for the normal Russia, if there is such a thing. I don't know. What needs to happen is the, you know, basically the 90s all over again, you know, the fall of the Soviet Union.
Total
but this time,
the
big thing. Yeah, but this time we need to repent of the evils of the regime like Germany did at the end of the war, right? Mm-hmm. See, Soviet Union never did that. The Soviets judged Germany, and they, you know, they were in Nuremberg. They were saying, "Okay, this guy is guilty." But who was judging them? The same executioners, right? The execution of one flavor were judging the executioners of another flavor, which should not happen, right? And that's what needs to happen this time, so we avoid similar things in the future, right? They need to absolve themselves of this. Filth that is the Putinist regime that's going to go in, down in history just as fascist or whatever. It's just going to be one of those Stalinist, Putinist. Yeah, it already sounds, you know, like Stalinist, Putinist, fascist. It sounds just like, boom, that's it.
It already sounds good.
It sounds good. Putinist. Yeah. I like that. You made up a word.
No. Hey,
but, and it's we talked about this earlier about how the Russia, one of our podcasts about how Russia fights better in the snow. They were going to start this war in the winter. We heard, and they were, but now we're getting into April. What's the weather? Because I was just reading that someone said the Russians can't fight in the rain. Apparently, Russian troops are really bad in the rain. So as it gets warmer, do we think like Russia will just put a pause, or are they just gonna? Is that just a big advantage? Or
yeah.
What's the weather like right now in Ukraine? I want to.
Yeah, it's finally getting warm, and you're totally right. But basically, it's a myth that they could ever. Fight better in the snow, but
right.
Yeah,
that home field advantage was nothing. Yeah
well, now there is no advantage. And even when they started end of February, that was the bad it was bad time then, you know, when they say in the snow. So basically you have to do it in January when you have a couple of months of solid winter, not at the
ground.
End of winter. Right.
Yeah, I think the Olympics screwed up his timing, but
Well, many things screwed up the timing. That's
China made him wait, right?
China made him wait, and Putin, yeah, he should have gone with his instincts. Got to fight in the, got to fight dirty, got to fight cold.
So, if the goal is to regime change, then can Ukraine do that on their own, or does it need U.S. Like, is now the U.S. You know what I mean?
Putin needs
US
to
help?
Die, doesn't he?
That's
well,
what I mean.
Yeah, but first it has to military defeat has to happen first.
Yeah.
But then we don't know what's going to happen, which way exactly it's going to go. Is it going to be a hit from the inside, or we might have to wait for a few years for the Russian population to, you know,
age,
rise up.
Yeah, to decline sort of. How it happened in the Soviet Union, right? It took a while for the shelves in the stores to just become perpetually empty on any given day, you know, not just a couple of crises or whatever, like, oh, we have
to go with all these sanctions. I mean, it could happen sooner rather than later.
Right.
Yeah, a few months from now, for starters, it's going to get bad. I mean,
right.
How's your family doing, Misha? They're in Poland, we should say, for everyone, people who haven't listened before. They left kind of right as this war started and got to Poland. You decided to stay in Ukraine.
Yeah, they left way before, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They left before they thought, before the 15th, which was the first estimated date.
Have they been staying in the same place the whole time in Poland? Are they able to stay?
No, look, they moved around. I'm just not familiar with Poland that much, but they finally settled in a place in Wrocław, Poland, and now, they're temporarily. But as I said before, their final goal was always going to be Germany. So that was actually part of their natural.
Ah, okay. So they're kind of on the way to Germany.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
but you envision staying.
I mean, I envision living in the world where I can be with my son like this, you know what I mean? I just get on the plane and like 50 minutes and I'm in Berlin or whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? Like, that's how I want to live. That's how I used to live before COVID and all that shit. I want to go back to those. Is it so much to ask? Can I just live a normal life, you know, and not be a refugee every time I want to go there? I don't want to travel 72 hours in the fucking train car filled with the old ladies and the screaming babies. No.
Screaming babies. What's wrong with you? Yeah. So, well, are you able to do, like, do you think comedy?
Some
like,
dude pulls up a guitar, starts playing some. No.
You're done with
that.
Is that
what refugees do? They play guitar? The
refugees play guitars. They you got to beg. It's a good way to make some money, though.
The guitar player is like the American, like a non-denominational Christian guy who's over there. His church paid for him to go like raise your spirits.
Yeah.
And so he's brought an acoustic guitar on the train and you're just like, shut up, dude. I'm just trying to get to my next town.
But even worse, though, Hillsong is huge here, you know? So this starts lots of like religious songs and everything, like Hillsong songs and lots of like these like traditional Ukrainian songs. I mean, I love Ukraine, but please spare me, you know?
Yeah. The war's enough.
I mean, now you don't need I am one. I am the dude with guitar. That's why, you know, I hate other dudes with guitars.
Yeah.
So we'll get you on some planes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's your move.
Like civilized move.
Yeah. Guitar guy.
Yeah.
Are you, we saw online there were some comedy shows in some bunkers around the country. Have you seen any of those in Kyiv yet? Have you been a part of it?
Yeah. We've been doing it. I'm doing it with a couple of people. We're probably going to start doing it in English. So yeah, we're slowly getting back into it, but you can't really charge people and keep the money, you know? So right. Most of the money that we make now, we just give to the military.
You say that going in, I guess you tell people where it's for charity and then. You gotta honor
it. I think at some point we'll just switch the model to part of the donations go to charity.
Yeah, you right. Gotta do at least give it 50-50 or something.
Should we be saying our Patreon is going to Ukraine? Would we have more subscribers that way? Maybe we should do that.
Maybe, but I don't. It doesn't matter because we don't have enough money to make a difference.
Well, we don't. I have a saying, but who's checking? You know, who's gonna check?
Dude, listen. I think now they have the land lease or whatever, from, is that what they call it in English too? Because in Russian we say land lease, but they might call it by something else, which is basically just an extended, it's not what it sounds like, right? But it's what they did in World War II, where they gave essentially just limitless credit or
credit,
whatever.
Like bonds to pay for it.
Yeah.
Bonds where you can buy war bonds.
Yeah.
Is that what they have in Ukraine?
That's what's going on right now. They should be agreeing on this as we speak, or
maybe I will buy instead of buying. I'm going to a bar mitzvah soon, and people are like, you mentioned Israel. We're always buying kids bonds to Israel, but maybe I'll buy a bond to the Ukraine instead to support.
That's better.
What's that?
What I was saying, the military is fine. You know, we should start the. You know, redirecting funds to Misha, for instance.
A bond to Misha. Money. All right, I'm going to give this kid a bond to Misha.
Does it appreciate?
It has to, right? I don't know how it works, actually.
How do bonds work? I don't know anything about
bonds. I don't know, but they're going to get like whatever, $500. They're going to get it eventually, but you don't pay
$500. It's much better than it's buying, like, please stop offsetting my carbon emissions. You know, I've gotten those gifts before. Oh, here's $100. And
Joe Schaefer.
It offsets your carbon emission, or like we're planting a tree for you in the rainforest. Like, who cares? They got enough trees in the rainforest.
Actually, hey, you know how I'm going to explain a bond to my son and be like, hey, it's like an NFT, but.
but eventually you're going to get money. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to buy you an NFT. Let's make an NFT for Misha. No.
So what about for you? You said your assets are frozen. How are you getting money?
Well, I had my Chinese card from back in the day.
Nice.
So that was going on. But now I'm having problems with that too, which I don't know why, but it hasn't been working for the last 4 days. So
I might have an idea.
Well, listen, the whole city is like a...
It's
like a Christian camp. You know, if you don't have a place to stay, you can just come up to like a guy with a rifle and be like, hey... Do you guys have a place to stay? And they'd be like, yeah, sure.
It's like Woodstock.
Wait, that's what Christian camps are like?
Into one. They take you in.
They take you in with a rifle and say,
yeah, come get in.
South. Okay. In the South. All right.
In the South.
You can stay for free.
You just got to say a prayer about Jesus.
Yeah, or definitely, dude, if you're hungry, there's no fucking way you can go hungry. You know, you just go out into the street and be like, guys, I'm hungry. And people are like, oh, dude.
Oh, that's great.
Here, food. Yeah, yeah. So there's not much to buy. There, you know, people are not hassling you for rent money or anything. Like, you don't have to pay rent. Yeah, so it's kind of easy, man. Like, the weed, even the weed guy has been giving me weed for free.
You know? Oh, good. I was going to ask. Everyone's been asking about that. Is Misha still getting his marijuana? So you are. So somehow, even in a war-torn country, they're still somehow getting supplies in.
Yeah, they grow it, man. Dude, I'm telling you, Ukraine is essentially, it's going to be the best European country in the nearest future. I guarantee it.
It could happen. I mean, so Zelensky is now like a global leader, which what you can't say that about any other Eastern European president. Like, we don't know the names. The whole world knows Zelensky. So he now has bargaining power. If he goes to the UN, if he wants to call Biden, it's like direct line. You could call him 24 whenever he wants.
I've got to run, Misha. So I'm just starting to interrupt.
Kaplan's got to take off. We got a little bit of a late start, which is my fault. So Kaplan's got to go.
I can't wait to listen to the rest. Be safe.
We will continue this. So, yeah, Zelensky does have a seat at the table of global leaders. And I could see that could be a giant benefit to Ukraine going forward.
No, I would change. Basically, it's inevitable.
I agree.
Yeah, so it's just the degree of how awesome it's going to be. That that might vary, but we've seen it before, you know. We've seen how countries, after the war, most countries hit a boom, right? Like baby boom, whatever. Infrastructure is going to get rebuilt and we're going to use all the best materials, best technologies and everything. I hope to God the corruption schemes that were happening before the war are not going to happen after the war, because I think people have changed too. You know, even the pro-Russian guys, it just kind of changes you, you know.
Well,
you
also,
live for a while.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that war just kind of makes things black and white, right? Because you live for a while and you're like, hey, everybody's doing it. I'm going to do it too. It's like everybody's stealing. Whose is it really? You know, what is this like? Hey, right. And here it's like, oh, no. The motherland and everything, right? You really feel it. It's like, oh, this is my country, you know?
It's a unified country more than ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't matter now what language you speak. Basically, if you say that you hate Putin, people love you, and that unites people. And I've seen it in Belarus. Essentially, same thing happened in Belarus. We were all united behind hating Lukashenko and the needing change. What's going to happen after Lukashenko? We will start fighting and amongst ourselves, and that's what Ukraine does when they're not fighting the outside enemy. They fight among themselves, which is great. That's how you evolve. That's how a democracy becomes. That's what America did. You know, I mean, look how many presidents you've had to kind of get it right, more or less. You know, how many
iterations. We had a civil war as well.
Right, exactly. So you had like 40 whatever plus, right, different iterations. And every time you have some bumps or some cool things that are happening, that's basically what Ukraine had to do. You know, they had six presidents while Belarus, in the same time that Belarus had only one.
Yeah.
Right. And we used to look at them and say, oh, look at them. They've changed their president six times and they still haven't achieved anything. Oh, yes, they did. It just wasn't apparent, but now it's apparent. And I think that's when you do the right thing, it's not apparent immediately, but at some point it reveals itself and you're like, oh, wow, that's how it was.
I mean, dictatorships are great because you can do stuff really fast and go in one direction, but they're great as long as you're going in the right direction. And it's inevitable that at some point you're going to go in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And I hate when people take Singapore, which is the size of SIP, if you remember, right? The Suzhou Industrial Park.
Singapore is a city state, right? It also, I actually studied this in college. It's tiny. Right. It also had a great port. Like it was strategically located to make money.
Yeah. So you cannot govern Russia by the same rules as you did Singapore, right? Or Lee Kuan Yew actually, or at least be like Lee Kuan Yew, you know, and put your family in jail for corruption, right? In all the other cases, authoritarian rulers became dictators and then they became tyrants. And if you know immediately that it's a flawed way and it's never going to work, why fool yourself? That's what I see a lot of my friends did. You know, they live for 10 years and they go like, oh, yeah, he's a tyrant. But hey, we've been living with him for 10 years. And they start justifying it like, well, I guess we need a ruler. Like, I guess the Russian people are just a special nation. We need a czar.
And what these tyrants do a lot of times is they pump in negative news stories from other countries that are democratic. So they go, see, if you were in New York, you'd be getting shot right now. Everybody's dying. Everyone's getting shot. You see, that's what a democracy does. You all die. So good thing we don't have one.
Yeah, that's one. The other one, they paid off all the politicians, right? Look at Schroeder, right? Gerhard Schroeder. Look at Marie Le Pen. So
wait, what do you mean? How Le Pen is connected to? What do you mean? Paid off?
She accepted money from him.
Oh, I didn't follow that. So Marie Le Pen just lost in France. She was running for president of France. She lost, but so she was being supported by Putin.
Yeah, but so she was closely tied with him, after the 2014 invasion. But of course, she tried to sever all the ties, with this as of February of this year. Right. But prior to that, she was pretty much tied to Putin, much like Trump was, you know, in this sort of like, oh, I like Vladimir Putin and everything. Like he seemed to be quite fond of him, too. Right.
Yeah, they were buddies.
And that probably because he got paid off by Putin as well. Right. In one way or another. And that's basically what
Putin helped, even if it wasn't money. Yeah. I mean, it's clear that the Putin.
Oh, yeah.
Troll Farm was supporting Trump. Whether Trump had anything to do with it or not, we don't know. But just sticking to the facts, for sure they were supporting him.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be money.
And he likes anyone who likes him.
Yeah, it could be other ways. But, that's the thing. A lot of world elites were kind of using Putin, you know, and he was generous because it wasn't his money, you know, he treats the country's money as his own pocket, you know, so he just throws billions around and he doesn't care. Like the FSB, the KGB guys, when they get even they're like sort of not even a general, but just like a mid-level guy, they seem to have just in their apartments, just like billions of dollars, you know, or like billions of rubles. And you're like, whoa, that's crazy. You know, where do they get these kind of numbers? But that's what happens.
Did anything come out of this U.S. Secretary of State visit, which happened a couple days ago as we record this, that you guys have heard about over there that maybe we don't know? I mean, you wouldn't know what we know and we don't know, but all we know is they met and they supposedly said they were there to celebrate Easter, but clearly they were there to give formal support.
Yeah, I think the conclusion is essentially that the goal is not for Ukraine not to lose, but for Ukraine to win. And so Russia has to be defeated.
Yeah.
I think that's, And to achieve that goal, Ukraine is going to get everything.
Yep.
All kinds of the weapons, anything they need. Because this war is going to, it might take, 5 years or 10 years. So we might have to have a defense system like they have in Israel. So there's no, basically Ukraine has to create a zero fly zone over Ukraine instead of NATO. That's one. And then artillery and all the other, basically we cannot have another situation. Russia cannot just regroup You know, because if you give them enough time, if you give them 5 years, they're going to have like, they will regroup, mobilize more troops.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, get some, I don't know, some, go to North Korea as they already did, you know, get some weapons from North Korea,
sure,
start shooting. So we basically have to eliminate that option.
It's a, yeah. And it, so strike now, like get them while they're weak. Go right on the counterattack. And yeah, it's a giant. So what this happened a couple of days ago, I mean, it is in our news. I don't watch a 24-hour news. I don't really watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. So I don't know what they're reporting. But if you read like the papers, it is in the papers that we were there and it was a big story. I don't know how much of America is talking about it because Cap's right. They are talking about whatever Elon Musk, but I think it's the most important government meeting we've had in two decades, because it's a stark, it's signifying a stark shift in how the United States is dealing with the world. So most recently, 2014, Russia invaded Ukraine. We did nothing, right? And then in 2021, sorry, last year, United States 100%, and this is Joe Biden, 100% pulled out of Afghanistan, and that was a disaster. And then with Lukashenko, we did nothing. That was last year as well, right? We didn't come in, and where I think in years past, maybe 20, 30 years ago, we might have sent in special forces or somebody to support the opposition to Lukashenko in Belarus. But so this logically, if I'm Putin, this did logically seem like the time to invade, because what the U.S. signals were pointing out is that we were no longer going to be defending countries on a world stage. We're pulling back, open season for any dictator to go take over whatever country you want. And this meeting 2 days ago just said was the U.S. saying, no, we're back in now. We're back in. Right.
Yeah. And here's why. Because they didn't want to interfere because they were afraid if they take out Lukashenko or Putin, those are evil, but they're stable. Right. If you take them out, you might get somebody who's unstable, and you would not want nuclear weapons in the hands of a madman. Right.
Yeah.
But Putin is the fucking madman. So there you go. That's not even the.
You're so right. And I think what's saving you. Ukraine again, going back to it, is that they already have Zelensky. He's not leaving. He's not going anywhere. And he's proven to the U.S. that he's a guy they can trust.
Exactly. And we didn't know that 2 months ago.
Yeah. He was a TV guy. He was some guy from TV who knows what his.
And listen, I'm writing a bit about that because when I lived in Lviv just a couple of years ago and he was running in 2019, you know how they say, basically there's a running joke in Ukraine. Lviv is the most Ukrainian city in the sense that everybody speaks Ukrainian. And the rumor is that if you speak Russian, you get your ass kicked, which is not true. I lived there for 2 years. I spoke Russian all the time. So I want to kind of make a joke that, you know, they say that you get your ass kicked by speaking Russian. Now, that never happened to me. The only time I almost got my ass kicked is when I said in Lviv that I supported Zelensky in 2019, you know. It's an inside thing.
Because they thought he was stupid?
Of course. And even I visited Lviv right before the war. Remember I told you, I was there like around the February 11th to 15th or so, right? And I met with my friends that I was hanging out with. And they were still saying how Zelensky is bullshit and Poroshenko was so much better. And 2 weeks later, they were posting like Zelensky and like hearts and everything, just a complete 180.
He's like George Washington now.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that you just kind of everybody has felt that. Even people, I always liked him, you know, so I've always had this favorable view of him, you know, but now I view him as more of a badass, you know.
Yeah.
If I kind of liked him as he's a kind of a goofy dude, but whatever, you know, he's cool. But now he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. OK, you know, you surprised me, you know.
So great. Well, I think that's it. What about, so this is the last question. I don't mean to end on a bummer, but so Buka, the world saw a few weeks ago when Russia pulled out that there was just like mass casualties, mass graves. And we had heard that there were probably, and this is a, was a suburb of Kyiv, and that Russia was in control of for a few weeks, and they basically just killed everybody. And we heard that there would be more of these stories coming out when Russia continued the pullback of the military. What, but then we didn't hear if there were more. Was there other places like this?
Well, that place Bucha is the way it's unique is because that's a place that was under Russian control and now they're gone, right?
Yes.
We don't have places in this situation yet, or big places. That's essentially, once we take Mariupol back, we look at the results. Do you see what I'm saying? Then we can assess. But if you can compare, Bucha is a tiny, tiny suburb, and we're talking about Mariupol. And if in Bucha we're talking about thousands of victims, then in Mariupol, I'm afraid it's going to be tens of thousands.
Yeah, there's and,
more. Yeah, it's... And the only thing I can say... Here's, you know, main points there is just a general level of humanity. Right. And part of it is all those guys come from sort of disadvantaged homes and regions. A lot of them come from like the Far East. Basically, they're not coming from like the Moscow suburbs or anything. And they're not like children of St. Petersburg intelligentsia or anything. So that's one. Another thing is that they were getting their ass kicked. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure that they did not expect, so they're just going all out. Plus we don't know what kind of like drugs they're using there and everything. On top of that, a very, very big thing, the last one, and but the huge thing is they're not looking at Ukrainians as humans, you see. The propaganda taught them to view them as fascists, which is insane, man. We look identical, dude. We speak the same language, essentially. It's tough, man. It's really crazy. And I've encountered it just, it shuts off, you know? You tell people, it happened to me when I lived in Lviv, so way before the war, It was the war started in 2014, right? But when I was in Lviv in 2019, you know, and I would go back to Belarus and I would joke around, you know, on this sort of, I don't even know how to explain it to you, man, but I would just mention some cultural Ukrainian things to people and it would trigger some of them, you know, they'd be like, oh, don't talk to me about this like Ukrainian bullshit, you know? And you're like,
these
yeah,
it's
like
Russians?
That. Even Belarusians have this. It's this condescension on, it's because over the last 8 years, all they heard from the telly, from the media, right, is that they're fascists, they sacrifice babies, they eat children, like that kind of stuff. Essentially everything that German propaganda used, but only way better. They are using all the algorithms and, you know.
Yeah, they have social media at their disposal, yeah. Facebook and everything. Crazy. Yeah. Misha, thanks so much, man. Thanks for doing it. As always, glad to see you healthy, alive. And I'm glad that Kyiv is back in the hands of, is back, everyone feels safe to go back outside and do stuff again.
Thank you, Turner.
Yes, we'll talk to you soon, man. That is it for the show. Kaplan's not here, so I got to say, get lost, everybody. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Misha.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.